Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are you unsuccessful and with few friends? Impress passers-by with the all-new Guitar Nerds t-shirt. Head over to guitarnerds.net/shop and buy yourself one of the all-new official Guitar Nerds t-shirt. Nerds.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hiya.
And Joe Branton.
Hello.
How is everyone?
Chipper.
Very good.
Great.
Before we get started, I just want to address something that's come up in the Facebook group. This was from Colin, who said, "Hi everyone, just want to let you know of a great new drinking game I've invented. The rules are simple. You'll need our favourite podcast and a bunch of drinks." So I'm not sure if he's talking about this podcast.
But is he talking about the Freakonomics podcast?
Let's assume that he is talking about this podcast.
Okay,
we
gotcha.
Like to think we're all your favourite podcasts. He says, "You'll need your favourite podcast, a bunch of drinks, tea, coffee, milkshake, Yakult, whatever you fancy.
Tequila!
Now take a big swig of your tipple every time you hear Matt glitch, every time someone mentions the random tone generator or DD500, and two swigs when you hear Jay describe something as really, really good, or describes the Mojo Mojo as transparent. I just discovered the podcast a few weeks ago and I've been working my way through them. Love your work, guys. Keep it up." So there we go. Thanks for sending that in, Colin. I think we could do that. What I will say is we do not endorse booze drinking.
Are we going to do an alcoholic podcast?
No, we're not. But the listeners, if they choose to, could
pick... I think it should be espressos.
No, but that's way worse. Like that girl who drank like 16 espressos while she was at work and died.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and there'll definitely be more than 16 swigs.
I just want to point out something that as soon as I read this in the group, I thought of something else that definitely should have been in there, and someone else got to it before I did. You more than I say really, really good. You say indeed.
Indeed. Matt says, "Funny thing is, there's some classics. I think we should."
I don't listen. I don't know. Does Joe? I tend to.
Joe doesn't say anything. I'll just sort
I
of switch off.
I tend to switch off.
Funny,
Joe.
So.
Every time Joe says something bad about Mark Bass, pour your drink on him. there we go. So if you can think of any other rules, we might put together some sort of official Guitar Nerds drinking game. Although we do not endorse the consumption of booze, particularly if you're under the booze drinking age, wherever you are.
It should be, maybe this should turn into a Get Fit podcast. Every time one of us says one of these things, just do a sit-up.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Or like a little, you know, a push-up. Or
yeah, do a push-up or a crunch.
Yeah.
The guitar podcast that gives you rock-hard abs.
Indeed, there we go.
Rock and roll.
Oh, I said indeed. Someone's got to do a drink. So, yeah, if you've got any other rules you want to add, go over to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, and do contribute to the Guitar Nerds drinking of non-alcoholic, perhaps Yakult, or...
I can't think of anything worse.
Yeah, that sounds pretty vile.
A drinking game with Yakult. Eggnog. I literally can't think of a worse drink. What's it made out of? Eggs. Oh, yeah, brilliant. Definitely there. How is everyone? How's everyone's week been? Matt Knight.
Very good, thank you. I have played some guitar. On a non-guitar related note, my girlfriend bought me tickets to see Derren Brown next week, so I was like, oh, that'd be really good. Finally get a chance to do that. Maybe he'll play guitar, who knows. Although I think that would
maybe
be
he'll make
weird.
You play a guitar.
Yeah, maybe you'll,
maybe imagine that.
Maybe you'll get maybe up on stage and play a air guitar with your pants down and you won't remember it.
Maybe it'll make me actually like a good player. Maybe it'll be like, oh yeah, like I'm gonna probably no, that's no. never gonna happen.
He's gonna unlock no. some sort of guitar secrets in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you take a drink. So you bought a new pedal this week, I see.
I did. I bought a carbon copy off a friend, and because I've
I saw I that just, creeping I've in on the corner of
one.
Your board.
Yeah, I've never owned one. At least I don't think I've owned one. I might have at one point. Maybe I bought one when they first came out.
I'm sure you had a carbon copy.
Do you know what? Do you know what though? It makes me realise that I actually really want a carbon copy bright. I really think they sound better.
They do sound better, 100%. They're in the. We should mention actually at this juncture that there is a couple more days to vote on the listener's choice for Gear of the Year over on the Facebook group, and what? Carbon Copy Bright is one of the options.
What's winning at the moment?
I don't know because I don't have my internet turned on.
I do feel like we should not count votes from people who work for the companies of these products. So I did notice earlier that the Boss products were...
There's
at least four people who work for Boss and Roland in the group. At least four.
Good on them for getting behind the podcast and stuff. Their votes may be discounted from the... they can vote for something else. You know, you're allowed to do
right.
that. Yeah, that won't happen. But yeah, at the moment, I think the ESA is actually winning. But who knows after we issue the penalty points...
I think maybe we'll take one off. Take one off for every vote that they've...
Yeah, I'm down with that. So I think that'll even things out a little bit. Carbon Copy Bright is also up there. It's going to be heated, I think. As with all the Gear of the Year stuff this year, I've been going back through and adding to the spreadsheet of Doom that is the kind of master tool for Gear of the Year. And I've added some new stuff. Everything's starting to... categories are starting to fill out a little bit more. It's going to be good.
I'm hoping that like we're all still talking by the time it comes to like recording the podcast.
After recording 6 hours of podcasts, I don't think we are still going to
be
talking.
Well, no, but my point is, you know, I think our plan is for the four of us to meet up on a Saturday night and have a bit of a chat about it.
Maybe can't do the Saturday, so we're going to have to record all the episodes
on the Sunday. There we go then. Okay. Well,
probably should have talked about this off air, really. But
well, I guess you know.
I assume that's all right with you guys. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of podcasting on Sunday when we do the Gear of the Year rundown. Jay Cross. Oh, in fact, Matt, you didn't tell us about your other new pedal.
Oh yeah,
which is really the more important one.
Yeah, so the amp brand Hovercraft, I sold it to Joe, also make a fuzz pedal, but rather than like the amps that are modded other amps, this fuzz pedal is like a completely unique design based on the drive circuit of their amplifier, and it sounds really good. Like, I'm really impressed. It's like really responsive to the volume control on your guitar, sounds just like an amplifier. And it goes everywhere from kind of just like overdriven to like super heavy fuzz. And they make them in like quite limited quantities. Like, they only usually make one or two at a time. And every one they do, they tend to do in like a different color.
Have a drink.
or different tones like that. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get that. So that's I've been messing around with that today, which means I've got four different drive pedals on my pedal board. And I was thinking, actually, I'd rather have more drive pedals on my pedal board than anything else, because they're the ones that vary more than I think any other pedal.
What it's quite a large chassis, the Hovercraft pedal. What have they called the pedal?
I can't actually pronounce the... I don't know how they actually pronounce it. Ionosphere or Ionstrophere fuzz? I don't really know how they've actually made the pronounce.
I'm going to go and look that up. And
it sounds like one of the weapons from Tiberian Sun.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's actually the same size chassis as a rat pedal.
Oh, okay. Really? It looked a lot bigger than that in the
pictures.
It looked
way bigger, yeah.
No, No, it's the same size as a rat pedal, and it also came with a picture, not of an altar for some reason, of like some random altar,
just
in
like
the woods.
A photograph.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a bit sinister, to be honest. A little bit sinister.
I know, it's a bit weird. But then that's kind of the quirkiness of that kind of amp manufacturer. They do all these sort of weird things and weird amplifiers. They made one. They did a series called like the Art Series, and they get loads of artists to like design the chassis. And it had one, and it had like a dead mouse in like what's that?
Formaldehyde.
yeah, like they had that in the side of the amplifier.
That's quite cool. There was formaldehyde in the amp.
Yeah, there was like a glass ball of it with a little dead mouse in the side.
Jay, you couldn't buy that.
I couldn't buy that amp
for so many reasons.
Who is that? Hovercraft.
Yeah. Hovercraft.
Oh wow.
How bizarre.
I've forgot what I was going to ask.
Is the dead mouse throwing you off?
Yeah, the dead mouse is throwing off. They did a Hello Kitty version of the Dwarvenaut 20, the amp that you owned and sold to me.
I mean,
they said they were never going to sell it, and it did come up on eBay about 3 months ago, but it was £1,500, and I was like, can't spend.
That's your dream.
Did they only do the one?
Yeah, they only made one. Yeah, and it was number 100. Because the serial numbers are just sequential, so every time they build one, it's just the next one, the number. There's not like a weird serial number, and that was number 100.
Presumably, there'll be all sorts of licensing around their Hello Kitty image. Do you think they just?
I don't think we'll just do one. Hovercraft care. Yeah.
Just do one; it'll be all right.
Matt, what was the other hovercraft amp that you owned? Because you bought when you sold the Dwarvenaut 20 to me, it was because you were buying a 50-watt.
I had Falcon 50. The problem was it was just too noisy. I just think because they modify other amplifiers, if you don't like upgrade the spec, they just, I don't know, they kind of have some of the flaws because what they're doing is they're buying cheaper amplifiers and then they're modifying some of the components. But unless you pay to have them sort of like super spec'd, like they leave some of the cheap components in it, and it was just like, it was really noisy to use at home. Like, and almost unusably noisy.
Sorry, who uses a 50-watt amplifier at home?
Yeah,
but the thing is, it's really, you know, you can wind them down for lower levels and it works really well because they have a half power switch, but it was noisy in the sense it was actually buzzing, like it was some sort of like earth hum or buzz hum, something like that. And I actually thought that the Dwarvenaut sounded better, I thought. But they've just bought out a new one that's completely their own design, so it's hand-wired from scratch.
What's that called?
The Caribou.
Oh yeah, I think like, I saw this. It's green as well, isn't it? The same as the Dwarvenaut. Yeah.
I think to be honest though, if I was going to have another one, I'd like upgrade all the transformers and everything because you can do that as a standard option on the website, and just changing the transformers to like a much better option would just give it a much better sound, I think.
I haven't watched it yet, but Reese from Bigfoot put up a video today about transformers, I think, in different pedals or some component in a pedal, talking about why his ones are basically better than everyone else's.
Oh, really? That's cool.
I've not got around to checking it out, but maybe we could talk about that next week. He is basically A-B-ing between, I think he's like modded whatever component is into someone else's pedal.
Right.
So he's like, okay, this is the kind of rubbish one that it normally comes with, and I think it's like quite an expensive pedal. I didn't actually get a chance to like really watch the video, but he then puts his component in and it sounds way better. And he was saying like even on top end boutique stuff, this is like the standard part that everyone uses, and you can just make it better by doing this. So we'll talk about that.
It's because that's the first part of the circuit, isn't it? That's the power goes into the transformer, and then basically takes the voltage and powers the rest of the pedal. So the better it is, the better all the components are going to work inside. And it's the same with an amplifier, you know. So if you kind of fall at the first hurdle, everything is going to, you know, it's not going to sound as good. And I know from talking to Reese, when he first bought the King Fuzz, I think that's why it took so long, because he was spending a long time just getting like the transformer right.
Yeah, I think that's what this video will delve into. But we'll talk about that next week when we've all watched it. Jay Cross, you've been out and about doing some gigs and stuff.
Yes, I played a couple of shows this weekend.
You did?
It was good.
What was the weirdest bit of equipment that you saw?
Okay, that's actually a very cool question. There's two. I've got two answers to that.
Okay, because I think I know about one of them, which is why I asked.
Okay, so I played a couple of shows, just sort of depping for my mate's band, and we played with a band, this sort of like pop punk band called the Spook School. And the bass player from the Spook School uses one of those Eastwood Mossrite bass copies.
I'm in. Nice.
It was wicked.
Okay.
It was really, really cool. Like, that was, it sounded really, really good. And I was kind of secretly hoping that I might, like, snap a string on my bass or something so that I
get
could
to use that.
Yeah, but it didn't happen. So there was that. The other thing that I thought was really good was the guitarist in that band had which pedal was it? It was the... There was one of those relatively new electroharmonics ones, the Hot Tubes.
Yep.
That's one of the mini electroharmonics drive pedals, isn't that Hot Tubes?
It is. There used to be an old version that had actual tubes in it, and then they'd
done
it
a really small one. The guitarist had two.
Okay.
On one board, and that was half of the board. There was two drive pedals
that were the same.
A tuner and a chorus pedal. I think it was a small tuner.
Oh, of course, an essential to pop punk.
Yeah. And the guitarist is just saying that like they did a tour in the US, and they didn't take anything, and just picked up one of these little pedals out there. And
the Hot Tubes.
Yeah, because that's what was on the board at home.
Okay,
but because they didn't take any of their own stuff, none of them took any of their own stuff. They I'll grab that. Took it home and went, okay, cool. Just put them both on the board, and so they were just set slightly differently. And I just had a chat, and like the reasoning was so solid. It was just, well, you know, I really like the sound of it, but sometimes I like it to be sort of dialed up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to keep... I used to just keep dialing it up and dialing it down. I didn't want to have to do that. So two pedals of the same on one board, I think, is very... I really like that. I thought it was really cool.
Matt, is that a common technique in the pedal board nerd fraternity, like stacking the two of the same drive?
Yeah. I mean, actually, I've seen... did I mention last week that there was a company that I found that mod electroharmonics big muffs to make them MIDI compatible so you can have 128 presets?
What?
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like there's so often those pedals are really good and it's like three or four sounds that you always want to use. It's kind of like the soul food, really, and I suppose that's why so many people sort of bought two or, you know, whatever, something like that. Because, yeah, I mean, sometimes there are sounds and people don't want to have to constantly change settings in between songs. So it's yeah. I suppose if they're like £50, which the Hot Tubes are, it's not so bad. But I'm assuming that I don't think I've seen many boards where two people have got like, I don't know, two clones on it or something. Well, what about
H9s? You see tons of boards where there's like,
you do.
You know, two or three eventide H9s.
That's a slightly different thing, though, because they don't
of course.
One.
DD3s as well, I think I see them doubled up a fair bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose with delay pedals, maybe more so, but things like Timeline or H9 or something like that, because they're MIDI, you can then obviously use a MIDI controller to change. You can have 100 different presets and loads of different sounds, where a drive pedal is probably only going to be three or four things you're going to use.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. What did you think I was going to say?
I thought, well, you text me saying this first band is using a headless bass and a drum machine.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, do you know what the headless bass was?
Yeah, it was a Steinberger.
Oh, of course. Yeah. It's kind of the only thing available.
It was a stock.
Only new thing available.
Yeah.
It was a Steinberger, and they had a lot of... But the guitarist and the bass player of that band, they were a two-piece, a guitarist and a bass player. And they both had a lot of pedals.
Okay.
I just wasn't into it at all.
Right. I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
No.
It's all about the Hohner the Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
They were like a cheap version of Steinberger, weren't they?
No, it was like a cheap version of like a Status.
Okay.
Because it was horned.
Okay. They used to do one that was just the cricket bat style.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Hohner did that as well. It was great because their idea of having the tuners on at the base of the body, rather than having the sort of... The circular bolt style tuners sort of sunk into the lower level of the body, Because the Hohner ones were so cheap, they were literally just
normal machine heads.
Machine heads on the bottom of the book. Oh, so cool. They're so cool.
I can definitely see you playing one of those.
Yeah, I've thought about it a lot.
Okay.
I haven't quite got there yet, but you know.
Talking about you playing one of those, what have you been playing this week? Have you been gigging or played anything interesting?
I haven't been gigging as such, but we've been preparing for tour and getting gear ready. I spoke about me expanding my pedal board last week.
Yep. Have you managed to fill that extra space?
I couldn't quite fit in the Gojira pedal that I have, so I've sort of got like I could just make everything have a little bit more space. Or I could get something else in there, but because it's a pedal train one, I can't put a Moore style mini pedal on there
because the slats are too far apart.
Slats are too far apart, and it's not enough space to turn it side on.
Okay,
so it has to be one pedal, but it's got to be thinner than an MXR pedal, but full size, which I don't think is doable. I don't think
thinner than an MXR, but
slightly
as tall as
well,
an MXR.
I tell you what, it could be MXR
tube screamer
width,
mini
MXR width, but the ins and outs would need to be on the top.
Okay,
that's where my problem is.
Matt, can you think of anything fun?
What, that's like mini sized
tube screw? Oh no, not tube screamer size.
No,
sorry,
it's got to be full
MXR
size. I've basically got about a Boss width of pedal. That sort of thing. I've got about that, but not enough room to get the jacks in at either end.
What if you buy some of those jack cables that are like completely flat?
Because they break.
Yeah, they're not very good.
Why don't you buy an MXR blue box?
Because you couldn't fit the jacks in the side. That's what he's saying. It needs to be something where the jacks are on the top. What about...
Why don't you buy that... what we were talking about last week from Ranger FX in London, that tiny
delay.
Little delay.
Yeah, I mean, that's a mini though, isn't it? Oh, it would be cool. Maybe I can fit it in though.
The jacks are top mounted. That'd be quite cool.
Oh, they are. I wonder if I can get that in because I probably have enough room to get the little Igor.
Yeah,
thing.
You can squeeze that.
You should definitely
get that.
Instead of getting that, you should have, or I'll just give you this thing that I've got that I never use, and I bought it years ago, and I've never really had a proper use for it. I've got a light controlled expression pedal. So it's basically just like
of course you have.
A little photocell on there. It's a tiny little box with a little photocell on it, and then it just takes a stereo lead out, but it works like an expression pedal.
Sounds incredible.
The only problem is that it works in reverse, so the expression pedal is fully open when your foot's off, and then obviously when you close the light, it closes. So because I was using it when I had one of those Ranger effects, and the problem was it's like having the expression pedal all the way up all of the time. So you kind of... there's no way to reverse the polarity, which is slightly annoying, but it's quite cool if you're using it for like weird effects and things like that.
That sounds mental. The other thing, I never did find anything, obviously,
sure,
for that board, but I have been thinning down my bass collection.
Okay, did you buy a bass collection
again?
No.
Joe, you won't have a bass.
Yeah, I'm cutting it down. I'm cutting it down. I've cut it down to two jazz basses, one P bass, one Yamaha, a bass six.
Yes, yeah, tiny.
It's funny you say that because yesterday I restrung a load of guitars and I was like, I've forgotten what I actually string up all my guitars with. And I strung one of my tellies up with the wrong strings, and then it was like completely through the action. I was like, So I've had to make a list of everything that I've got and then all the strings that I use because I just keep forgetting.
I don't have that problem
anymore. That's awful, Matt.
It's not a bad problem to have, is it, really? Too many guitars.
That's the sort of thing that could end a relationship if your girlfriend ever finds that list.
Yes. Yeah, she'll be like, Matt, you've lost the plot. You've got too many. So what did you sell?
Well, I'm putting up my Billy Sheehan signature Yamaha.
Okay. When you say putting it up, do you mean just put it in the bin?
Well, no, I'm putting it up for sale, but I was going to sell it because I owe the artist that does my band's artwork some money, and because we've had a lot of other things to pay out for, I wasn't going to be able to pay him for a while, so I thought, I'll do that. And then my girlfriend got a massive pay rise and offered to front me the money for a little bit. So
you don't necessarily have to sell it.
Well, no, I was going to sell it anyway, and so I've been having a chat with, I forget his name, the guy who runs classicandcoolguitars.com.
Oh, God, not this again.
Yeah, Limelight fake Fender custom shops. Yeah.
I feel like we've been here just, so many times.
Just buy a real one.
No, I don't need to.
You'll sell it immediately.
No, what I will do is snap it on stage at some point.
Yeah, why would you do that? It's still 500 quid. They're not cheap enough to just chuck them around.
No, but that's the point. That's what I'm saying. Not deliberately. I'm saying accidents will happen.
No, when have you ever snapped a bass on stage?
I don't know, but I would feel very, very uncomfortable.
When has anyone ever snapped a bass?
True, but I don't want to tour a 2.5 grand instrument. I don't want to tour it.
It's more likely that it will get stolen, and that is something that I would be concerned about if I had a guitar that was that much money.
Well, there you go.
So get insured.
Yeah.
I still don't want to tour a 2.5 grand instrument. So, but it's, you know, it's the only way to get some things from Fender, so this is an alternative. So I've been specking up a Heavy Relic 51P bass.
Okay. I mean, if this is good, it will be a good instrument as long as they do it correctly. The problem that I worry about is you buy and sell stuff all the time, and you're going to buy this for what, 600-700 quid?
Probably close to 8.
Yeah, okay, and then you're going to sell it for £300.
Well,
this time next year.
Yeah,
this time next year. But on Basschat, they hold their value ish. As much as any other second-hand brand does.
We'll see.
Not as much as Fender does.
I can almost guarantee we'll all be here in a year's time and you will not own that bass anymore.
Okay.
How long is it taking to get
made? I don't know, actually. I'm not sure we bridged that yet.
Okay, fine.
But if I was going to go to Fender and say I want a Heavy Relic 51P bass,
well, you'd have to get Master Bill.
They want £3,000 for that.
Yeah, and true, but you'd also be able to sell it for, you know, £2,500 probably.
If I don't get it stolen at a show.
Yeah, but then get it insured.
Yeah. I also don't have £3,000.
We're never going to win this. You mean, what, your Yamaha Billy Sheehan's not worth £3,000?
No, it's only, I can get maybe two for it, £2,000, I think. But
£200.
But maybe you'll do someone on the podcast a deal.
Yeah.
£15.
Yeah. Nice. Should we dive into some news?
Nude men.
First up is not gear related this week. It's talking about guitars for sale. Paul Kossoff's Les Paul has come up for sale. Matt, what are the details?
So Bonham's auction house in London got it up for sale. John Bonham has come back from the dead and started an auction house specifically for this Les Paul.
Okay, sweet.
That is quite a story.
I have no idea who owns it now. I'm assuming it's coming from some sort of like private collection. It's come up on this like entertainment sort of memorabilia auction. No price, no estimate is given. You have to phone them if you want a rough idea of how much you definitely won't be able to afford it.
We should have done that live on the podcast.
I reckon it's probably true.
I can do it now.
No, let's not call them now. That's awful.
Can we phone them? Let's phone them on the podcast. Maybe next week.
Probably not open at 7 o'clock. Probably are, actually.
Yeah. I reckon someone's at Bonham's the whole time. Definitely.
Yeah. You're probably not going to get through to a security guard.
No, I could do one of my voices.
No.
Hello.
No.
It's Ian McKellen here.
All I'm saying
is... I would like to purchase a guitar.
All I'm saying is we are recording the Patreon straight after this. So you never know. That might be on there. It might not be. We'll find out.
We should start doing prank calls on...
No, definitely not. We should definitely not start doing prank calls.
We'll do Joe Phones, a different guitar manufacturer, and ask them annoying questions.
You could, that would actually be quite funny. But let's definitely not do that right now. Matt, tell us, so it's going for loads of money.
Yeah, it's going to go for a load of money. It was featured in a book called The Million Dollar Les Paul by Tony Bacon.
You think it will be?
Think about it.
Why is that funny? It's called Tony Bacon.
Unfortunately, Bacon is a funny name.
I've got a book.
Have you? Really? Wow.
I got it for free when I went to the...
Go on about your Gibson trip again. So it's in the Million Dollar Les Paul.
Yeah, but the weird
thing
is... Will
it be $1 million then?
No, it's going to be more.
It will be a lot. It will be a lot of money. The weird thing is that apparently the headstock broke off.
It as if it's
he threw it at a gig and broke the headstock off. from the fifth fret. So the neck from the fifth fret upwards and the headstock have all been replaced, which is why there's no serial number.
What?
Which is really weird.
Sorry, when you say the headstock broke off from the fifth fret, that's not the headstock. Neck.
That's the whole neck.
Yeah.
All the usable frets broke off.
Like, I'd rather have had the other side, the other bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, which is quite weird. And obviously, it's going for a lot of money because of obviously the person who's played it, and it is still a 59 Les Paul. So, yeah, it's going to go for a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah. The crazy thing is, as I was saying to Mark just before this, there's another 59 Les Paul for sale in London at the moment at Hank's Guitar Shop in Denmark Street, which was owned by Gary Granger, who played for Rod Stewart, and they've got that for $1 million at the moment, so £660,000. But that is probably one of the nicest looking Les Pauls I've ever seen, and it's basically in mint condition.
So we think the Paul Kossoff is probably... it certainly won't go for, like, Peter Green money, will it? It will go for surely less than that.
Well, the thing is with the Peter Green is they've all changed hands privately, technically. So yeah. No one really knows how much it's worth. It's when these things come up for an auction, it kind of... Yeah, it almost.
I think we've got an idea of how much it was.
Yeah, he probably paid £1 million for it. I mean,
when Kirk Hammett bought it, he paid more than that.
I don't think it was ever announced how much he paid.
No. No, we only know about the £1 million deal. We'll see. Interesting that something like this is... And, you know, there's also a kind of bit of a auction fever, I'd imagine. Like, people are probably willing to go over the top a little bit.
Did I see in the Facebook group someone said that they were offered it?
Yes.
Was that true?
I think so, yeah.
He said... Because I saw there was... I wasn't sure if I was getting mixed up between this and another 59, but I'm pretty sure it was this. Someone said... Did you see this? Someone said they were offered it in the early 70s for £500.
Yeah.
And he turned it down because it had a headstock break.
There we go. Again, not a headstock break.
Because that is...
True.
It's got a headstock break.
Yeah.
And so, the weird thing is he bought it in 1970, which once again just shows that fact that these guitars just
Paul
weren't
Kossoff.
Popular. Yeah.
Did
he bought the guitar in 1970 and only had it for 6 years. So it's quite weird.
Wow.
There we go. If you want to fancy chipping in on the Patreon, maybe we could get ourselves a new guitar to share between us. We'll see. So earlier we were talking about stacking drive pedals. Has anyone ever stacked two pedals with the same name by two different companies?
No, because it doesn't exist.
Well,
what about the Maxon the Maxon TS9 and an Ibanez TS9?
Yeah,
how about
yours.
That one, Matt Knight? Pedal expert Matt Knight.
Isn't it called an OD9?
Balls.
You won the quiz and everything. It's not possible, Matt. Surely not.
Until now.
That was really bad.
I know. Yeah. So on Thursday, I think it was, Electro-Harmonix and JHS both released a pedal called the Crayon. Do you want to tell us about it, Matt?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one because when I first saw it, I was like, is this a joke? Is it like genuinely a joke? And obviously we know Electro-Harmonix are known for making sort of cheaper pedals now that sound similar to other units. But I've listened to both and they do sound quite different. And so I personally think it's a complete coincidence where others have said Electro-Harmonix are definitely ripping them off.
What's weird though is Electro-Harmonix have showed two different versions of it with two different artworks. And someone asked about it on the Facebook page. They were like, oh, it was on the YouTube video, I think. Someone said, why are there two different, like, looks there? And they said, Mike won't tell us. Like, Mike Matthews, who's the designer, said, yeah, like, apparently he just won't.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tell them why there's two different ones in the video. Who knows when you buy one, what are you getting? Which one will you get?
Who knows? I mean, it's... I don't know. Maybe they've just decided to do two different graphics.
Maybe they're just going to do that from now on. Like, they know that people...
That's quite a nice idea.
They know that people are, like, well into buying... Because there's a lot of people who just buy electro-harmonics pedals because they don't like electro-harmonics pedals.
And they're cheap and you can own them all.
Like, maybe Mike Matthews has just decided to do what... You know, the sort of music industry has been doing for a long time by like pressing different numbers of pressings on of vinyl on different colours.
It's like your comic variant cover.
Absolutely, like, yeah. Maybe they're just starting to do that.
Yeah, that might be the case. So describe the sounds then, Matt. What does the JHS Crayon do?
So the JHS Crayon is a smaller version of their pedal called the Colour Box, which was basically the input channel and EQ from an old vintage mixing desk, and you could use it as like a DI out for guitar, but you could also use it as a standalone sort of drive pedal / EQ pedal. This is the drive section from that pedal in a separate box, so it basically masters all those kind of like direct in distortion effects that, you know, like the Beatles used and Led Zeppelin used, basically plugging into a valve desk and then cranking the preamp, so no amplifier, just going straight in, so you get all these kind of sort of really nice sort of distortion sounds, but sort of some all out fuzz sounds as well, where the Electro-Harmonix Crayon tends to be another overdrive. I mean, they're kicking out overdrives like one a week at the moment, it seems.
Seriously, in the last, so we've been doing podcasts, I guess, together for 3 years.
Yeah.
In the last 3 years, there's probably been 20 different Electro-Harmonix overdrives.
Yeah, easily.
Something like that.
If not more.
Because all the things like Satisfaction Fuzz, Soul Food Bass, East River Drive, The Crayon, Hot Tubes. I'm sure.
I mean, they must be just working on this stuff. I suppose because they've got a bigger team. So a company like JHS is a small company in America. They hand make everything in their own workshop. They model a load of other pedals. And I just imagine Electro-Harmonix is probably just absolutely massive.
Yeah.
And they've probably got like a huge team of people just constantly just like designing circuits.
Yeah.
I mean, just going on the overdrive section on their website, overdrive fuzz and distortion, there's probably like, yeah, a good 30 effects on there easily.
What was the that one, the log? Was it just called the log?
Oh yeah, it was logarithmic.
Oh no, it was called the...
It was
the lumberjack.
The lumberjack, oh, that was it, yeah.
I was going to say the woodsman.
The woodsman.
That's my new pedal, the Woodsman. It's bonkers that they both came out the same day. The thing that I really like, the Electro-Harmonix one, what I like about it is it sounds like a really good recorded overdrive tone. It sounds like a guitar plugged into like a Marshall or something, but it's also got quite a lot of flexibility because it's got separate treble and bass EQs.
Yeah, I suppose because that's what they've tried to do is make a full range overdrive. It's not mid-heavy like a lot of tube screamers.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of overdrives, you know, especially can be really fussy about what sort of amp you put it in, whereas this one, because it's full range, you've got the treble and bass control, it'll work better with a bigger range of amplifiers, where some like tube screamers into certain amps just don't sound great. Not because the pedal's bad or the amp's bad, but just because there's so much mid-range in those units. Bizarre that they're both called the same name, but they both do like completely different things.
The Electro-Harmonix kind of reminds me of like pedals that you'd see like 15 years ago, where they'd just be like an overdrive
just generic overdrive, yeah, or kind of
the overdrive.
Or, almost something like, you know, like the Boss Mega Distortion or something like that. I mean, it doesn't really sound like that, but it's got that kind of thing. It's not pretentious. It's not like, oh, you get a nice like mid-range boost that's really going to cut through. It's not like a transparent overdrive. They've just gone, here's an overdrive with bass and treble.
You said before that you prefer that, the Electro Harmonix one to the JHS one.
I haven't spent enough time with the, or haven't listened to the video or anything really on the JHS. I kind of know the idea. And if it sounds like...
I love the idea though. I think it's so much more interesting than the Electro Harmonix
one. Yeah,
yeah, I know that they're obviously, even though they have the same name, they're not really competing.
No.
But just the idea of like a sort of direct in style... drive.
I mean, I love the like late Beatles kind of guitar plugged straight into a desk overdrive. So I reckon the JHS one will be really good. But I just really like a simple 50 quid. I assume it's going to be about 50 quid.
Oh, yeah, it won't be more than that.
A drive that you can, you know, a young kid might walk into a shop and say, I just want an overdrive for my guitar. Hmm. Like these days, it's such a crowded market and there's so many complicated options.
But don't also, you think that's a reason to have an edge rather than to not have an edge?
But I mean, think the
Electro Harmonix are making themselves into the Pokemon cards of
yeah, of course. But I think this has got an edge by not overcomplicating things. Like everyone's going for like transparent overdrive or Tube Screamer clone or Clone clone. This is just like some kid who walks into a shop and goes, I really like overdriven guitar sounds.
And you give him an
and
SD1.
You just go, here's of course there's some Boss options as well. Him or her, indeed. But I just think this is good. It's got loads of control on it. It's not going to cost a lot of money. And they're kind of small. You could just add one to a pedal board without too much hassle. So let's do... So I'd not heard of this company, Dorna Prints. Had you heard of them before, Matt?
I'd never heard of them until someone mentioned it on the
Such
Facebook.
Such a good name, though.
The, what, the Dorna Prints?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great name. So this new pedal they've just released is the Boonar, which is a... it's a Benson Echo Rec in a box, so I guess they're going for Strymon Deco style.
No, because this is the thing. The Benson Echo Rec was the only vintage delay pedal that didn't use or a tape echo that didn't actually use tape. I suppose it was like magnetic, so it had it physically recorded it onto like a disc. Almost like they had no parts wear out, and it was more reliable, which is why loads of people started using them. But they have a sound like all of their own, so it's basically a type of a vintage like tape echo, like multi-head like tape echo effectively.
But they've so on this pedal they've also, from what I understand, done things like they've done on the Deco where there's, you know, can colour the sound a little bit and things like that.
Yeah, I think they've got things like like you can change like the age of the like the magnetic drum, so you're going to get like more vintage cool. Sort of like warble and stuff like that. I mean, it seems like a really cool unit, and it actually seems like going to be a really reasonable size, a bit like the Pigtronics pedals.
They're kind of like an MXR pedal but turned on their side, aren't they?
Yeah, well, it's like they do, because you know they do things like the Aria Distortion and the Philosopher's Tone. I think it's basically the same size as that. What looks like it anyway,
like the same sort, I guess. Something that people might know a bit more than those pedals, it's like the same as the Zvex pedals. Fuzz Factory.
I want to get in touch with them, see if we can get one to do a video demo, because I really really want to hear what it sounds like just through an actual amp. You can't really get you can't really judge on a YouTube video for something like that, I don't think.
What I really like as well is that you've basically got a separate button that's like a swell and like a repeat for like infinite repeats, and then the like you can change the drum age on top, but the four controls on the top are one gives you more treble one way, more bass the other way, and then you can kind of like you can actually tap in the playback heads you want, because it's got those four buttons on the front.
Yes,
so it looks like it could be really interesting, because you get some quite good rhythmic effects with that as well. There's another pedal similar to this called the Echorec from Catlin Bread, I think. Yeah. make basically a very very similar pedal to that, so it kind of has like a tape echo echoplex, probably more like a space echo type of vibe actually.
Okay.
On something like that, which is quite cool. I've never played an original one though, which is a shame, but I've heard plenty of pedals like this that give you a good idea.
on the last of our new pedals this week, the Charlie Foxtrot by Maleko. This is a signature for a guy from the Dandy Warhols, is that right?
Yeah, that's a weird choice for signature.
Dandy Warhols still a band?
Don't know. No idea. But it's not the main fella, because he's like a... You would know his name. It's like the guitarist from the Dandy Warhols, I think. Tell us what it is, Matt. It's a kind of weird sort of vibey...
Yeah, it's this cut... I mean, there's a bit of background. The company Maleko, actually, they also make Eurorack synth modules as well for like... for, you know, modular synthesizers, and they actually made hand-built a load of the Roland ones for some of the limited edition Roland analog modular synth stuff that's coming out, and they've been building pedals for absolutely ages, and they do loads, nearly everything they do is kind of weird and wacky, and this one is like an Electro-Harmonix freeze, but you can sort of, it's almost like you freeze a sound, but it repeats it infinitely like a delay, but with no oscillation.
Yeah, so it's doing like a weird glitch thing. It's like, basically, I assume that you hold down the pedal to record a part. So if you were to do a chord, it takes like a sample of that chord and then repeats it rhythmically. And then when you change chord, I assume you hold it down again, it does the same thing. So you're setting like a tempo. It's very, very weird pedal. The videos with him actually are really cool. It's kind of... Yeah, I'm not really sure how you would use it. In the same way, like the Montreal Count to Five that you've got, Matt, you know, it takes some kind of playing around with to get anything out of it. I think this is going to have a similar vibe.
They call it a digital buffer / granulator. You can get, I think maybe it comes from the idea of like Boss DD3, if you turn the repeats all the way up, it doesn't actually self-oscillate. So there's also like a hold mode that captures like two or three milliseconds, and loads of people have used it for kind of like playing chords, and then you just like hit that and then hit the DD3 and you get this cool glitch sort of effect that you can then modulate with the delay time. And I think this is basically taking in like a similar thing. But yeah, you can then like change the, I think you can change like the size of the capture and then the pitch as well. So like, once again, it's one of those cool things. We just like, we should try and get our hands on it and see if we can do a demo on it, basically.
Definitely.
Peter Holmstrom.
There we go.
Is the second guitarist, the lead, the main fella from the Danny Warhorses.
That completely household name.
Courtney Taylor Taylor.
Really?
It's his name.
No, it isn't.
Courtney Taylor Taylor.
Wow, okay.
Taylor Taylor is
Soldier
hyphenated.
Spy.
Oh, that's so good.
I think it may be his... parents are both called Taylor.
Okay, sweet.
I don't know. But one thing, so I'm just having a quick look on Peter Holmstrom's Wikipedia page. It lists all of his gear and stuff. So he's got some very, very cool gear. One of the things he plays, this looks like the last time it was updated, or at least the gear stuff was updated, was 2000, or at least that's what he was playing back then.
Okay.
But he had a bass 6 tuned A to A,
right?
Which is very cool.
Really cool.
Yeah.
That's also really hard to get hold of back then.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably a vintage one, I'd imagine.
The other thing in here that I'm really interested in, Matt, I think you might be as well, and I'm a bit, I don't really know how you do it, but one of the pedals that it lists that he uses is a Boss DM2 in a wah-wah housing.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That kind of makes sense, though, doesn't it? If you think, if he's using... like a pedal where you can swell up the feedback, that's kind of what this pedal does, just by holding down a button.
Well, maybe that's why
they've made it.
Yeah, maybe they've... Yeah. So there you go.
There we go. That all makes sense. Makes sense. Talking about low-tuned guitars, one last bit of news this week. PRS have just announced the SE-277 semi-hollow soap bar and the SE-277. Matt, have you had a chance to have a look at these yet?
I was just having a quick look on their website. I don't think they've actually landed yet. I think they are like shipping now, basically, but they look absolutely awesome. It's good to see more baritone stuff that isn't necessarily like metal orientated.
Yeah.
Tuning
on these is pure baritone. Is it like B2B?
Yes, B2B. It's a 27.7 inch scale length, chambered with F-holes and soap bar pickups.
Well, that's one of the models. There's also a standard humbucker one, isn't there?
I think there's a 277 baritone and then a 277 baritone that's hollow body with P90s.
Yes.
But yeah, ships tuned B to B. And it looks awesome. I must admit, like, because they look like normal PRSs. Once again, they're kind of not metal orientated, so they look really nice. Which is actually one of the things I forgot to mention earlier was that earlier this week, I went to a clinic for Misha Mansour, who plays in a band called Periphery, which is not necessarily a band I'm like kind of massively into, but he was like a really big guitar nerd, and he's got obviously a couple of signature Jacksons that he's had done to in like odd tunings. And like all of his guitars don't necessarily look like really metal, but obviously they've got like a really cool sound to them. And like the pickups he uses, the bare knuckle juggernauts, are like super high output, but they're really like really crystal clear. Unlike, you know, using something that you might like distort an amp like really hard, those ones actually kind of worked really well for like clean stuff as well. So I think with people using or going for his style of music, especially at the moment, like these are a really good option for PRS, I think.
People are tapping into that kind of like new jazz stuff, aren't they? Where yes. It's like people are doing jazz, but it's like overdriven. Like, I guess you like Tosin Abasi and
well,
stuff like that.
Speaking of which, actually, this you haven't put it in the news, but and I guess it's because it's not been sort of completely announced yet. But the first couple of photos have arrived of the new Tosin Abasi signature model.
Okay,
have you seen any of these, Matt?
Is it another Ibanez?
I haven't. Actually,
it is no. Ibanez. It's
are you allowed
Ibanez
to talk about this?
Yeah, it's Tosin Abasi's been putting it on his Instagram.
Oh, okay.
So it's not anything that I've been given embargoed or anything. Because it's not finished. He's had two prototypes.
Okay.
Two photos have been uploaded about it. So,
No, it's not the headless thing, is it?
No, but it is really strongly based on that. Now, the thing with Tosin Abasi is he was previously, I can't remember the name of the brands that used to make his signature models. I think Strandberg were one of them, and he had a couple of others. But yeah, he went for all those exotic wood, headless, fan fretted 7 and 8 string guitars. Well, I agree. I wouldn't play one, but I think he made them look really cool, and he certainly plays them incredibly. But he went from those to his Ibanez, which was weird considering what he played before. Like, he used to have like a cowboy hat and one of those big long what do you call those
waistcoat
macs, the long macs with the
parka,
no, with the bit, the cowboy bit.
Cowboy bit.
Oh, like a duster.
Know. Duster, that's
okay.
It. Yeah.
That's really so weird.
He used to wear those and play this 8-string exotic wood headless bass, and it looked like a shotgun.
Bass.
He held it. Oh, guitar, sorry. And it looked like a shotgun when he held it because of the way he dressed. So it was so yeah, there you go. Jay's just found a picture.
I've just found it. It looks, I must admit, people are going to love it or hate it. I think it looks awesome.
Oh, the Ibanez. You're talking about the Ibanez.
Yeah, the Ibanez.
Okay, well, yeah, we were just looking at the old picture of him in his duster and cowboy hat. But yeah, and so his, it was a real odd thing when he went for his Ibanez signature model, and all of a sudden it was basically an 8-string RG Strat style thing, and it was very traditional. You know, it had some very traditional features, like being sort of HSH.
It was an RG, and basically, wasn't
an
eight fleshed out to 8 strings,
exactly. But all of the little bits about it made it very quite traditional, even for an RG. So this is more in line with what he played before. So he's not gone for an exotic wood; he's gone for a matte black, but it's a matte black top, and then you've got it looks like it was that Purple Heart. For the actual body wood, so you can see the wood for the rest of the body, but it's a sort of stealth black top, and it's a single cut, but like I use that term in the bass format of the term, so when the top horn goes halfway up the neck,
oh god,
and joins halfway up the neck, so it's way more, and this one's fan fretted as well. I think it's not headless; it still has the same Ibanez headstock, but yeah, looks great, and he's gone for this time just two active humbuckers. I don't know what they are yet, but like traditional sort of, you know, the sort of soap bar style,
like
humbuckers,
a block,
yeah, like a block rather than the sort of traditional style that he went for before. So totally different. I mean, hopefully less than $4,500, because that original
kind of killed the original one, didn't it?
Well, it did, didn't it? Because it was a great guitar, but it was so expensive, and for a guitar that. Anyone who buys an 8, well, not anyone, but most people buying an 8 string are going to be buying an 8 string maybe for the first time. It's a very new instrument, and you're going to be learning on it. So to have to put down £4,500 on it just made it out of a lot of people's sort of not necessarily their price area, but how much money comfort they're willing zone to spend on an eight string. But so that's why they released the budget version, of course. But the budget version was so budget.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah. I mean, it was £500, but it looked like a £200 guitar.
Yeah, and that because there was no like adornments on it. It was just exactly, like complete black.
Yeah, it was a bad idea. And I think this one, hopefully, they're aiming. Hopefully, it's a grand and it looks great. You know, and it will. This will actually be what the original should have done, which was be a more affordable, because it's made by a big manufacturer, alternative to going to all those weird custom shop brands that Tosin went to for his previous signatures.
That's what I was going to say, is that there's a weird like underground culture of the kind of people that are into this sort of music are really into really
obscure brands,
super exotic guitar brands. I was talking to Ben from Bare Knuckle, and he said he went to a guitar show recently in the UK. I can't remember what it was called. He said, no, it wasn't in the UK, it was in Frankfurt, and there's basically 120 different builders there, instrument builders. None of them are major brands. They're all like boutique guitar builders. And he said that they're building loads of pickups for those companies because all these companies are coming out with like 10-string, like 11-string guitars that people are going nuts for, and they're building all these specialist pickups.
It's certainly not a market that I'm kind of tapped into, but like I know that loads of people are into Strandberg and stuff. So.
Speaking of which, I've been hearing that because this is, I guess, our last podcast before Black Friday coming up at the end of the week, that a lot of custom shop companies are going to be doing
Black Friday
really? Discounts. Yeah,
interesting.
So if there was ever a time to get in your headless 8-string Babinga custom
your
shop,
your Limelight bass, yeah, get it now because you're definitely going to lose money on it when you sell it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so if you can get a Black Friday deal on your Limelight. Anyway, should we do some questions?
Questions.
So let's do Josh. It's chaos out there tonight.
There's a lot of police.
There is. I live in quite a nice neighbourhood.
I genuinely thought I'd get away with it.
I don't even want to know what the crime is.
Crimes against music.
Crimes against facial hair.
That Polymath record finally dropped on Spotify and they're out for him.
Josh says, I will soon have £2,000 to spend. Would love an old Gibson Les Paul. The older the better. What can I get for that sort of price?
Well, you could get a headless 8-string mayonnaise.
Can I get a guitar actually made out of mayonnaise? Because then I could eat it. So, £2,000. What will that get you on the vintage Les Paul market at the moment, Jay?
I tell you what it won't get you. It won't get you anything that I want from that, which is to add a little bit of context from this, I saw this question and I was very interested in it and I was sort of having a little read up on it. And I think Josh goes on to say that he's really after something with P90s. I'm pretty sure that's what he went on to say.
Okay, I didn't. I just copied the initial question. That's possible.
I'm pretty sure it is. And Matt's the person to ask when it comes to vintage stuff. I mean, I only ever really look at, because my sort of long term gain is I really want to get a double cut Les Paul Junior,
okay,
a single pickup double cut Les Paul Junior. I'm constantly on the lookout, and they're always a lot more money than I can afford.
Wait, a single pickup double cut?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Why?
That's just a weird thing to.
That's great,
for.
Isn't it?
No. They make them.
Yeah. That's why. Would you
get a single
just
cut?
Just a single cut. Yeah, that's the best one, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the best one.
Oh, I do like this. I really like the double cut. So
yeah,
you still have your double cut.
Yeah, I've still got that.
So £2,000 won't get you that.
No, not if you not an original one. What can you get? I mean, I guess
probably quite a lot on Black Friday.
If you're maybe not vintage.
I don't think the vintage guitar market is affected by seasonal sales, really.
Well,
I
mean, it's nearly 2016. 2015's got to be considered virtually
vintage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, where are you? If you're looking at something vintage, I mean, I guess to a certain degree, this opens up the question of what you would consider vintage.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Because
are you going to get anything? are you going to get anything pre? Yeah, I mean, are you going to get anything pre 1958 for that money? Are you going to get anything like 58, 59, 60? No, you're not. And then if you're looking at Les Pauls, you've got like sort of 10 years where they didn't produce them.
Ish.
You know, well, maybe not. But, you know, there's. What year did they come back?
1968.
68. Okay, so you've got nearly 10 years when they didn't produce them. So, you know. And was the sort of late 60s stuff that good?
I'll tell you what you would get that you probably get for $2,000. You might have to spend a little bit more. You might be able to pick up like a late 70s deluxe, which might either have mini humbuckers or it might have P90s. They're they're not bad guitars.
They're not great guitars, are they?
They're not great guitars, but they're not bad guitars.
Some people, I've seen quite a few come in for sort of like, you know, general setups that people have had that they've bought, you know, secondhand in the 80s or owned since the late 70s. One thing you can pick up for about $2,000 is a late 70s, early 80s Les Paul Custom, which tend to be quite nice. The only thing is some of them, I can't remember what period it is, have got the sandwich body, so they can be really heavy. But some of them, you've got to play a few of them. Like, there's definitely, like... you know, there's some good ones out there. Unfortunately, they're just not as consistent as the stuff now. And that's the thing, is you say, oh, I want to buy an old Les Paul. And it's like, but, you know, you could buy a traditional from 5 years ago for 1,300 quid, or you could buy a traditional this year for 1,699.
It doesn't really... Gibson don't work like Fender. You don't have, like, a 30-year period of good guitars.
No, and that's all. But I would agree with you. I would say if you're looking at something from the sort of late 70s, early 80s, then the Les Paul Custom is the one to look for.
They're the most consistent.
Yeah,
definitely.
Actually, I'll tell you what you could get, just as something's popped up, because I thought what I'd do is I'd just pop on eBay and see what's going for that sort of money. Secondhand 52 Les Paul Custom, like custom shop. Because it's P90s, trapeze bridge. They were like £2,500 new when they were a standard model. So now you might get one for about $2,000.
I would think that would be the way that I would go. Rather than actually buy vintage, get yourself a nice custom shop from the last few years.
I would say so. And actually, one of the suggestions that someone put up there was a 56 reissue.
Yep.
Which I think is such a fantastic guitar. I really, really like the 56s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's you're going to get a much more consistent guitar. You probably end up getting a better guitar for your money, like over those 70s and 80s guitars that can be patchy at best.
I mean, like, you know, this is something we've spoken about at length before, but Gibson, I mean, I genuinely think Gibson are making, as much as 2015 was a wobble in some ways, you know, in the sort of production... and the more sort of production line market. When it comes to the custom shop stuff, like I think they're building better guitars now than they have done in I don't know 40 years. I think they're some of the best guitars they've ever made.
Yeah, the thing is they're constantly moving forward like any company should, and they're constantly changing the way they do things to make it better. Mm. So, you know, now they are making things better than they ever have.
I would say that the thing to like, if you're looking for something sort of modern-ish, a good thing to look for would be something from 2013. I think 2013 was I think 2013 was Gibson's best year of like the modern era.
Yeah.
Because it was the year that I mean, my traditional is from 2013 and I really love that. But also, you know, you've got that was the first year that the custom shop really stepped it up a notch, and they started using high glue and the anodyne dye, and you know, it's
they actually introduced five new bases
in 2013.
In 2013, yeah. Which is mental when you consider they do two now.
Yeah, yeah.
It was five, excluding the fact that they had two different alternatives in their SGs. As well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I've just as an end to this, I've come up with a couple of eBay selections for under $2,000 that you could possibly go for. 2006 Gibson Peter Frampton Les Paul Junior Pilot Run 3 P90s.
Yes.
Basically, it looks like a Les Paul Junior with 3 P90s. It looks absolutely amazing.
Is there a Gibson 2020 on this?
Yeah, no, 16.39. That's not bad. Okay. And it's basically a three pick at 3 P90 Les Paul Junior, a 1980 Les Paul Pro, which basically looks like a Les Paul custom sunburst plain top with P90s. That's going for £1,700. And Jay's going to kick himself here. There was a 2008 Joan Jett Melody Maker now going for $1,500.
What? No way.
Jay should have bought one when he had the chance.
I was expecting you to say £400.
No, $1,500. £1,018.23.
Oh, Jay.
With another £75 shipping.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Used as well, not even in mint condition.
Did it go? Did it sell?
It's on there now.
That's too much money for that guitar.
There's Paul Melody Maker.
Any bids?
No, it's just to buy it now, so there won't be any bids.
What?
It's just,
someone's having a laugh.
Speaking of eBay, I saw that Alien Ant Farm's base go up again.
Oh, did it? It went back up. Okay, interesting.
This time with like a buy it now.
Okay, unsurprisingly.
For how much?
The last three times.
Oh, it was
sold.
A lot of money. I think it was like $9,000 or something.
Unbelievable.
It's mental.
So dumb.
I'm heartbroken about that Joan Jett.
We should do some sort of eBay podcast, because there's some weird stuff on eBay at the moment. Especially, I just put in Gibson and there's like odd colours, like models I've never heard of.
Okay, I'll tell you
they're
what.
Probably fake.
I'll tell you what, we haven't got anything lined up for the Patreon this week, so why don't we carry this over into the Patreon?
Oh, I thought I was going to phone up loads of brands.
We're not doing that.
At 7:30 on a Monday, you're really, like, there's
hello?
One person there's
hello?
One person stuck at Sotheby's, and they're really, really pissed off that they're there at 7:30
on a Monday.
Joe calls
hello,
up.
Is that the Fender CEO? Why don't you...
I can do something like that.
And if you would like to pay for that content, you can head over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where for just $5 a month you'll get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week. That's 2 hours a month for only $5, or for $10 a month you will become one of our executive producers and get your name read out thusly.
Hello, Gibson design team. You know your 2015 range? Why don't you go frickin' realise that they were rubbish?
Are you going to read the names?
Is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
Yeah, that's how this works every single week.
What are you doing?
I'm reading them.
Eric Seary, Paul Corrigan, Dale Resco, Jack Conway, Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Fletch Fletcher, Phil Thompson, Moo Gravick, Colin Anderson...
I like that one breath approach. It works really well. There's a little bit of tension.
Yeah,
all the
I
way
hope
through.
No one else signs up to this, because
it's gonna. I hope people do sign up, and you can do patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can also join us on Facebook, where you can submit questions every week. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can join us on Twitter @guitar nerds. Over on YouTube That's not how YouTube works. YouTube.com/guitar nerds videos. We're going to put one up this week. The top 5 Christmas gifts for guitarists 2015. Do join us on Friday when that goes live. New content every Friday now. We're going to have pedal of the week. We're having top 10 videos. Jay's probably going to do something on video at some point.
So
Friday, every week we're going to be putting up new stuff. You can join me @mark_random on Twitter. You can join Matt @Matt_Nightsy, that's Knight with SIE on the end. You can join Jay @JAYBN1 and Joe @Joseph_900. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Farewell.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.